Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. Coming up on this weekend edition, some really interesting stories. Do parents really matter? There's research trying to say that they don't. I think we know where this is heading. We'll take a look at that. Also, a long history of leftist hatred in light of the shooting this week. There's a piece about some of the violence coming from the left. And also, young men are playing video games instead of getting jobs. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think it's a bad thing. We'll talk about that and more this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio. We're at 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm and the live link at thetrumpet.com as well. Don't forget about the TuneIn app. That's a good place to listen if you're on the go and you have a smart device. You can follow us on Twitter also at kpcgfm. And if you have a comment, go ahead and send those in. Comments at kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondeau here today. It's going to be a hot weekend. If you like triple digits, could be over that this weekend for at least a day or so. I'm not ready. I'm not emotionally prepared for the onslaught of the summer heat.
Yeah, last night I was at a bachelor party and we were playing soccer. Just celebrate the upcoming marriage, I guess, through soccer. And
as is traditionally done, yes.
It was brutal. Most of us are out of shape. We haven't played soccer in a couple of years, and it was just sore. Like, we weren't even playing soccer. We were just standing around kicking the ball, more or less. And it's just going to be a rough summer for all those people working outside and playing sports and all that stuff in the brutal heat.
Takes a while to get used to it. Yeah, we've had a pretty pleasant year so far. It hasn't been super hot. Sometimes it is in the spring, but might get over 100, so we'll see how that goes. You know, it's interesting. If you were to believe just, I guess, what you hear coming out of the media, you'd think that no one likes President Trump at all. But the new daily presidential tracking poll, yes, they do it every day. The Rasmussen Report's daily presidential tracking poll for Friday shows that 50% of likely U.S. voters approve of the president's job performance. And then they had to add also that 50% disapprove. So, in case you couldn't figure the equation there, they gave you some help. So, it's a split. It's right down the middle, 50-50. And, I don't know, approval ratings, they jump up and they jump down. They go all around, I guess, depending on what's happening. But it doesn't seem like the media coverage is 50-50. But the approval rating is.
Yeah, I think that's really surprising, considering that almost 90% of coverage from most outlets are negative of the president. And also, almost every day they quote approval ratings where Trump's approval rating is 38% or less. His disapproval's in the 60s or 70s. So they're obviously just picking and choosing the information. I'm sure depends on what segment of the population you ask, I suppose. But it is amazing that people, despite all the negative information coming at them, they still like what they see. And I think if you do look past the headlines, he is doing a lot of things that people approve of because he is starting to restore some kind of respect to America on a certain level. Maybe not in the most traditional way, but he's still doing it.
And there is some improvement within certain sectors of the economy. It is interesting, though, if 90% of the media coverage is negative, which I think has been pretty well proven, but 50% of the population roughly approves, either they're not listening to that media, they're going somewhere else, or they hear it but they don't believe them. So that's an interesting thing to think about too in relation to what the media is saying but what people are feeling. There's a little bit of, well, quite a wide gap there.
Apparently there was a segment on CNN about a week ago where the anchor and maybe a couple of the panelists were lamenting that people were not listening to them as much, which is definitely borne out in the fact that Mr. Trump won the election and the fact that he is still doing pretty well in the opinion polls. they know that people aren't listening anymore, and that is upsetting to them.
Yeah. So those are interesting numbers. They do a poll on that, or a survey every day, presidential tracking poll. Yeah, every day. They should break it down minute by minute. It's like the national debt. You can just watch the numbers. The numbers vary. Here's something interesting coming out of Europe. It's from Heat Street. Danish post office suspends deliveries to immigration hotspot. Drivers are too scared to go there. Post Nord, the national mail carrier, this week pulled its staff from Valsmose. Sorry if I said that wrong. A district of Odense, Denmark's third largest city. It said the decision was made after one of their vans was broken into during a delivery. Violent threats have also been made against two other drivers. Local media reports noted that immigration and crime are a problem in the area. So, again, we see a disconnect between maybe what some of the politicians have said in the past about being more inclusive and opening borders, and then on the ground, they can't deliver mail to certain areas because of the high crime rate and the threats to the drivers.
Well, first of all, that sounds like it's a city named after the Norse god Odin. Is that correct?
Could be. Odin, yes.
I was immediately distracted by that part of it. But yeah, it is definitely an issue in any place that is allowing an influx of migrants and they're not vetting them thoroughly enough. You just don't know what could take place. Clearly, in most of these circumstances, it is causing areas that are high in violence, places that become what they call no-go zones.
Yeah, and that is something that you'd have to think about anywhere in the world where you're delivering mail or you're delivering packages. People know you're bringing things that have some value at times, and if you have to deliver something into a bad part of town, I suppose you would be quite nervous. You know, people know that the FedEx guy or the UPS guy, he's got stuff. And, you see those, what are the Brinks trucks? They always take the cash out of stores or restaurants. Those are very heavily guarded. I think there's two people in each one, and they're armed. And because of the fear of being robbed, that people know there's money there. And it'd almost be the same now for these other drivers. It's not to that point, but, I mean, if you're going into a bad part of town, you would have to worry about your safety.
Yeah, it is a pretty big concern because mail delivers packages, but also information to people, sometimes very important information. And I think what's interesting that this brings up a concept that maybe hasn't been talked about a lot, and that is when someone immigrates to a country, they bring their culture with them, whether good or bad or whatever. I'm a Canadian American, and I definitely have Canadian culture in America, and everyone who comes from a different place brings it with them. And so the question is, what's the goal of having these migrants in the country bringing immigrants? Do you want to allow them to build a miniature version of their country inside your country, or do you want them to accept your values and that sort of thing, or do you want them to have some kind of multicultural where everyone can live? There needs to be some kind of goal there, and each country kind of has its own goal. But with these migrants who are really in Europe, there isn't really that mindset. And so you have situations like this where people come in and they bring their own version of law and order with them, whether that's good or bad. And it's creating situations like this where the government, in this case in Denmark, has to decide, do we impose our version of law and government on them, or do we allow them to live as they want? And that's a very touchy situation, but that's basically the choice that's going to have to be made.
Yeah. So if you're sending a letter or a package there to that area, it may not get there. Post Nord. I like the name of their delivery system. But who would have thought being basically a mailman would be a dangerous job? You just have to worry about dogs. Now you have to worry about being robbed and so forth. So that's about bad news. This is an article. It's really interesting. Abraham sent it along from The Spectator. Do parents really matter? They say everything we thought we knew about how personality is formed is wrong. Well, according to them. And they use an example of identical twins. This has happened over the years. There's been identical twins separated at birth. They did not know that they had a twin. It was adoption, usually. And years later, they meet the identical twin, and they're they have similarities because they're identical twins. And so they're looking at this and they're saying, well, hang on a second now. It doesn't really matter who raises you or where you're raised or how you're raised. You're going to end up like you end up anyway. That's the thought. I disagree with that, but and so do some higher authorities such as God. But but according to Proverbs 22:6, train up a child, he won't depart from it. But they're saying it doesn't matter. What do you think they're trying to do here?
How is that even possible? How is that a line of reasoning anymore? Or I guess now, apparently that's the way people have been thinking. That's been the trend, that parents don't matter. Specifically, what we've been hearing the most is that fathers don't matter and that single mothers are heroes, which really they are. But if they put themselves in that situation on purpose, that's not necessarily a heroic thing. What they're trying to do, it seems like, is undermine the family structure, the nuclear family, and say that any type of way of raising children is permissible.
Yeah, they're absolutely trying to destroy the family by telling you it doesn't matter. It's Marxism is what it is. Here's what Marxism thinks. They think the modern nuclear family functions to promote values that ensure the reproduction and maintenance of capitalism. The family is described as an ideological apparatus. This means it socializes people to think in a way that justifies inequality and encourages people to accept the capitalist system as fair, natural, and unchangeable. One way in which this happens is that there is a hierarchy in most families which teaches children to accept there will always be someone in authority who they must obey, which then mirrors the hierarchy of boss, worker, and paid employment later in life. So that's what Marxism teaches about family. They want to destroy it because they say it's a capitalist system. But of course, if you look into the Bible at all, you know that that system is in place because, yeah, you do have to learn that there is somebody in authority in your life, which in this case would be God. And again, as mentioned, Proverbs 22:6 says very clearly, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. This article, this research, which is junk science, of course, flies exactly in the face of that. It says, no, God lies. That's what they're saying, because they want to destroy the family, because I guess it's a Marxist world that they're looking for.
Well, the family is economically viable. We've also seen other studies on this program that have proven that. I don't know if it's necessarily capitalist, but it definitely is a great way to earn an income and be stable in society financially. But obviously, that's not necessarily what a Marxist would prefer for families. You harken back to someone like Hillary Clinton, who isn't even that far along as maybe a Marxist would be, but she said that it takes a village to raise a child. That means the government has to have a say. They have to be in charge of the education, the child-rearing tactics, things like that. That's a disturbing way of thinking of it, thinking that raising a child is the responsibility of other people instead of the ones who actually brought the child into the world.
Yeah, and the idea that the parents would have no influence or very little is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Just craziness. So anyway, that's what they're writing, but you can see that they're starting to throw this stuff out there. They're not writing about ideology by naming it what it is, Marxism and so forth, but they're just having a little article. Well, parents don't really matter, but where are they leading to? That's the more disturbing issue, I think.
Well, yeah, to me, this article brings up two big points that they're trying to get along or push. The first one is that when you're born, you are who you are, and nothing can change that. So if you're born having a certain sexual orientation, that's the way you are, nothing can change it. If you're born wanting to identify a certain way, that's the way you are, nothing can change it. So I think that's a big part of what they're pushing. The second one is just anti-government. That, yeah. I think a line to end the article says, parents, they're quoting a psychologist, and the psychologist says that parents don't hold the tomorrows of our children, we just hold the todays. Which is ludicrous, because a parent is the single greatest influence in the child's life, probably for their entire life. That's not always the case. Whether it's a good or a bad experience, the parent has tremendous power over a child. And so it's a lot of responsibility, but at the same time, Marxism wants to destroy the family inside capitalism or the free societies, because the strength of a free society is in the family, because that's where the child learns about obeying authority, but also learning how to have initiative, how to be successful in the workforce. All these ingredients to being successful are usually taught in the family, or if it's not, then they have to learn the hard way, I suppose. But if Marxism can destroy that, then everyone's becomes this amalgamous class where they can start fighting each other, and that's what Marxists want.
They can be controlled by somebody at the top.
Yeah.
Of course. But, you know, like that statement you brought out, which is in the article, that parents don't hold the children's tomorrows, just their today's. That makes no sense on any level in anything you want to think about. If I eat a giant chocolate cake today, will that affect my tomorrow? Yeah, probably, because I'm going to have some caloric issues. If I have my hand cut off in an accident today, does that affect my tomorrow? Yes, because my hand is gone. Think about anything in life. Of course what you do today affects tomorrow. Of course it does. It's just one of those sayings people could put out there and think, oh, well, that sounds good, but it doesn't make any sense. What a foolish thing to say.
Well, like you said, it's junk science. They're using the case of identical twins is so unique and so off the statistically small that it can't apply to everyone. But there's plenty of other science out there. There's hundreds of books on how divorce affects children, on how traumatic events affect children. And so most of the problems children have, the scars they get, are from poor families or situations gone wrong, those sorts of things. So there's no way you can tell someone who's been through a divorce, like if their parents were divorced or they had a very traumatic experience as a child, that that didn't affect them and that they were the same before as they were after. That's ridiculous, and they'd probably be very offended if you told them that, because that's not the case at all. And so I think this is just an opinion not based on science at all, but it's just based off of a belief that once you're born a certain way, you can decide, and that no government authority can change. You should have all the power in yourself. No government should be able to have a say on what you should be.
Right. Government within the home and so forth. Yeah, it is very interesting. You know, one thing they don't bring up either, they don't talk about where the identical twins were raised. Were they raised in similar situations? Like, they don't mention anything. I don't know. Maybe they were. They don't bother to talk about that. And like you said, it's a very odd, it's a very small segment of the population they're looking at to try to extrapolate this big thing. Speaking of, you know, being born a certain way and you can't control it and all that. I went to a local establishment. It was Starbucks. I might as well just say what it was. And there with my kids, just get a delicious beverage on a summer evening. And there was a whole advertising campaign about that. You buy this special drink that promotes the, you know, homosexual agenda. I wish I just wouldn't push that. That's not what I'm going to those places for, but it's being pushed at us all the time. And as a parent, I just get tired of it, quite frankly. So that was there in my face last night at Starbucks.
Yeah, well, it's the old nature versus nurture, and it's hard to, in a society where the government or these corporations are demanding that people accept something or that they have that kind of nature push on them, that this kind of lifestyle is accepted by them and in their minds all the time. And it is just interesting that like this, they're trying to prove it with science. And if they can't use science, they're just going to put it in public so much that it becomes normal or becomes so accepted that these kids growing up seeing that, they don't know what it was like before where you had a little more freedom of thought and expression on what you believed was right or wrong.
They have their agendas for sure. Here's a write-up from CNN Money. Retail bankruptcies are up 30% this year. I think this is a trend everyone's noticed. Actually, last weekend when I was driving down to Austin area, there was a couple outlet malls. Those are always a fun stop off. You can walk around, stretch your legs, take a look at some stuff. It's a lie, man. All the stores are closed. We stopped at one. This is the second time I've been burned, but it's a different mall. So, yeah, there was only... boy, four stores open out of probably a potential 60 or 70. It's a ghost town. It was actually kind of scary. We pulled off, and the stores were shuttered except for a few, and then there were homeless people walking around, and police arresting them and putting them different places. And anyway, that's the state of the retail world today here in the U.S., just a ghost town.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I'm reading a biography on John Wayne right now, the actor, and during the Great Depression, there were lots of cases where people, they tried to open up their own small business and it folded because they just couldn't afford it, or bad financing or whatever it might have been, but they still found a way around it, and they were able to get jobs elsewhere. But now that was the Great Depression. It was very basically the economic apocalypse
yeah.
at that time. And it is interesting today where it's kind of the same trend and people are struggling a lot if they're in that industry, but yet there is the illusion of prosperity around them.
Sure.
But I don't think that's just a very bad sign. I mean, some of it's online retailing, that sort of thing, but it is a really bad sign for the economy if one of the cornerstones of American society is vanishing. I just think that's despite us looking prosperous, it's just a really bad sign of where we're heading economically.
Here's a list of some of the stores that you have to maybe not go to anymore. Gymboree.
Oh.
Yeah. Kids clothes, I think, right? Rue 21. I rue the day, but they we're going to close that one. Payless Shoe Source. Gordman's stores. I've been to one of those a couple of times, I think. Gander Mountain. They're going out. Radio Shack. They're kind of iconic, but a time has passed them by as well. H.H. Gregg, I'm not familiar with that one. It's an appliance and electronics retailer. Wet Seal, that's been in the mall for years. I've never been in one, actually. I've seen one floating in the ocean, but that's not what they're talking about. And The Limited. And now it's going to be really limited because you're not going to be able to find it. I think they might go online. Some of them might go online or something. But anyway, so they're shutting down. And a lot of these malls, now they're trying to figure out what to do with the space. Some people think maybe a data center. Some people think you could use them for like conventions, but you know, especially like an outlet mall. What kind of a convention are you going to have? You know, it's just a bunch of stores in like a rectangular shape around this huge parking lot. And like you were talking about, Abraham, with like just a sign of the economy, you notice there's all these really expensive homes all over the place. Everywhere you look, it's just expensive homes. And then the middle of them is a retail mall that went out of business and is like ghost town.
Yeah.
So it's like a donut where everything is on the outside and the middle is empty and hollowed out. So not a good sign, I guess. And I kind of like going to those places once in a while. So it's not the same just sitting online. I'd rather walk around a little bit.
Yeah, it's fun to get out. That's usually the attraction of going to a store or a location in person instead of doing it online. That's kind of a fun afternoon. And you would think in the middle of all those expensive homes you were talking about, people would have the money to maybe go to the store. But obviously the average American is something like $16,000 in debt. A lot of that debt probably being taken up by the home. So maybe there's not a whole lot of money to spend outside of that.
Yeah, maybe not left over. Here's a couple of things that happened on this day in history. 1896 on this day, the temperature hit 127 degrees Fahrenheit at Fort Mojave, California. So we're going to have a warm weekend, hopefully not 127. That's too hot. That's where the whole argument about, well, it's a dry heat, it doesn't matter. That's too hot no matter how you slice it.
Yeah, it's like trying to live in an oven. It's just, I couldn't imagine that getting that hot.
What's the hottest you've ever been in?
Oh, it was down here. It was close to 110, I think.
Yeah.
But I think that's the hottest I've ever been in.
Yeah, that's about. I think one day I remember it being about 112 down here, something like that. And we had an outdoor activity, and I spent the day sitting under a tent doing nothing, and I still went home and felt horrible. I think I just laid on the floor near the air conditioner. It was just too hot. I guess some people would get used to it, but I don't know that I could get used to that type of heat. Too much.
I think I'm just so used to it. It doesn't even register for me. Long time ago, I used to spend the whole summer outside, whether it was mowing lawns or playing sports. And so being here my whole life, I haven't really noticed too much. It's actually more enjoyable than coming from the summer into the fall for me when I feel like it's freezing cold once it goes down to 80 degrees. And that doesn't seem normal.
Well, I think sometimes because we typically go from air conditioning to the heat, it's hard for the body to to handle that. If you're out in it all the time, you kind of maybe
definitely
moderate a little bit. Also on this day in 1935, U.S. Congress accepts FDR's New Deal. The New Deal was a series of programs, including most notably Social Security, which is bankrupt, by the way. Right? It's still going along. I mean, it's still happening, but there's more debt there than they can handle, I believe. So I think that's a matter of time before that thing goes by the wayside.
Yeah, well, the New Deal at the time was seen as a great thing, well, by some people, but it's probably the greatest power grab by any president ever, just centralizing the power of the presidency. But also, was really the first time a president was able to introduce socialism into the United States under the guise of not socialism. So it is interesting looking back at FDR, because he's a great war president, but in the 30s, he was probably the most powerful president we've ever had, just centralizing the power. And that's why the Republicans hated the New Deal, because it gave him so much power. Even though it helped people in the short term, like through the Depression, it's just kind of an interesting thing to study. And today we're still dealing with the legacy of it.
Yeah. It's hard to know how successful something is without taking a long view and really looking at it. Kia David program's coming up, also the Trumpet Daily Radio Show and the Trumpet Hour Weekend Review program this weekend. Make sure you listen for that. Top story at thetrumpet.com, Erdogan's attempt to Islamize Europe, not a word I say often. And then related to that, failed integration, Turkish voters in Germany back Erdogan power grab and Europe's immigration crisis, a clash of civilizations. You can check that out at thetrumpet.com. Of course, the big news this week was the shooting there of Congressman Scalise, and still in critical condition, I guess, last I've heard about it. And so there's been this debate now back and forth about, well, the rhetoric, the hatred between divided parties here in the U.S. It's been talk, but now when it becomes actual action, people start paying a little more attention. But according to this write-up, Grant, from Buchanan.org, titled A Long History of Leftist Hate, this isn't new.
Hey, you just were speaking about taking the long view, and this is what is what this writer did in this article. This is from Patrick Buchanan, who I think ran for president three times, and he's a pretty prominent conservative commentator now. He has been around a while, and he talks about how pretty much his whole life he remembers these types of attacks, and he remembers history he's read about attacks that took place before he was even alive. Whenever he was 12, there was that attempted attack by Puerto Rican terrorists trying to assassinate Harry Truman. Whenever he was in high school, Puerto Rican nationalists did enter the visitor's gallery of the house, and they began firing pistols, wounding five congressmen. Abraham Lincoln, James Garfield, William McKinley, and John F. Kennedy, the four presidents who have been assassinated in the country's history, and the list just goes on, all the times that either anarchists or, in the case of the 60s, the 70s, and up to today, people on the radical left wing have started singling out Republicans to shoot at.
I think it's a Daily Caller website. They have a list of some of the violence recently from the left in particular. And I was kind of reading through the list, and I do remember some of them. They weren't really covered by the major media, but other people were. In this day and age where you can record on your phone and post it to YouTube, people were doing that, and you guys probably saw some of this, and the listeners probably did as well, where there were campaign stops, I think, for President Trump at the before he was elected. And he was a candidate at the time, and how violent it was. I mean, it wasn't just holding signs. It was violence. It was fighting. Now, there was probably some instigation on both sides from what I saw. But still, the atmosphere was really, really hot. And there were a few instances where it did boil over, where somebody started getting attacked. And then you could tell it changed. Like in the one case I'm thinking of, this person, they were more of an agitator. And they were trying to stir up this anti-Trump crowd, and they did a good job of it. And then people turned real quick, and it became violent, and that person very quickly tried to get out of there, tried to run, realized, oh, this is serious. This isn't just going to be a verbal battle. People are coming after me. And the guy brought it on himself in a way, but still, it was a really hot atmosphere, and it blew up quickly. And that wasn't really reported on a lot in the major media, but it's not a surprise if you've seen some of those videos to know that there's a lot of hatred that's out there. And it spilled over this week, but it's not like it just showed up this week.
Violence is definitely becoming commonplace. It's been around for a long time, but it's taking place a lot more now. And at the same time, discourse and debate are being poisoned and completely cut off and silenced. That's what really leads to a lot of violence, when you're never allowed to hear the opposing point of view, and you just brand all of those people as lunatics and evil. That's when you can easily justify attacking those people you think are evil lunatics.
Well, and then there's this whole new terms or new words that have shown up, right? Being triggered. Almost as if, well, I can't help it. I couldn't help it that I lost control because, well, you said something that triggered me. I saw today that somebody claimed they were re-triggered. So apparently it can happen multiple times.
Oh, no.
It was just some celebrity. They said, well, they were re-triggered, and that's why they did whatever they did. But, you know, that wasn't even a known term as it's being used now. A year ago, was it? I never heard of it until just recently. But the idea behind that is like, well, what do you expect? You know, I can't control myself because you said something that was just so offensive that I can't control myself, and almost washing their hands of any responsibility.
Well, what's interesting is that being left and right are kind of vague terms. They don't really explain exactly what's going on. But people who have more liberal or leftist ideology throughout history, that's okay. It's not bad to be liberal. Liberals have brought a lot of good things into different nations. The problem is, ever since really the 1930s, the liberal movement has been hijacked by Marxism and communism, and that's very well documented, especially in the United States today. That happened in Europe a long time ago, but in the United States today, through the 60s, 70s, that kind of radical ideology took over what liberals used to be and turn them into what they are today. And that involves protesting, these sorts of more violent behavior, because that's what communists want. They want the violent overthrow of capitalism. And so they promote this kind of behavior when it's not really liberal, it's communist. And so with all that doesn't explain all the reasons why, violent events have happened. But I think with all the violent riots we've seen in American society, going back to the Vietnam riots and then to today, a lot of it has its roots in communist-type manifestos and ideologies. And so it's anti-American at its core, even if people don't necessarily realize that. And so that's really the issue here, is that it was designed specifically to destroy a nation like America.
Right.
And it's very effective because it attacks the head.
Yeah.
Of the government by using any means necessary. And so people don't necessarily put these events in that kind of lens, through a red lens, if you can say that, but that's really what it is. And it's very easily provable too.
Well, sure. I mean, and I think if you were to look at what, say, people are protesting today in some cases, it's anything that's considered American. There's stories today about somebody shooting at somebody that had an American flag on their vehicle. Well, what's wrong with an American flag on your vehicle? Couldn't you have an American flag and be one or the other? We all live in America, right? But no, they understand. I think it's understood that, well, that flag, or being a patriot, or however people would define it, that's bad, according to this communist idea. It represents oppression. It represents colonialism, whatever they want to say. And so really, it's not about two different thoughts, but still both American. It really is trying to take down America at its core, is what it is. And even though people may not verbalize it that way, if you look at the actions, what are they against? It's always against anything that's a traditional Americana, as you may define it. And so I think even though they don't talk about it like it's communism, the actions are pretty clear. That's what it is.
The American flag is disappearing on the left. You will not find a single American flag at any left-wing protest or riot. You will not find one unless it's someone decked out in armor and some sort of stars and stripes outfit to attack the attackers. There are some extreme guys on the right who are Trump supporters, and they are retaliating. They're the ones who might have the stars and stripes on, but it's definitely not anyone on the left. In the meantime, you also see a lot of them burning the American flag, which is what takes place over in the Middle East and in a lot of radical Muslim type areas. They're no different, really. That's to the point where we're getting that. You see a lot of communist flags, you see a lot of Iran flags, a lot of Palestinian or ISIS flags being flown at some of these demonstrations. And at the Democratic National Convention last year, they didn't have any American flags on the stage until they were criticized for it, and then they finally put them up. So the entire left has become ashamed of the flag, which represents the country. They are hugely anti-American. And then you even see at the same time their counterpart over in Britain is trending the same direction, with Jeremy Corbyn being a literal friend of terrorists and believing that Britain invented racism.
Yeah, it's the other day actually I saw a pretty good sized pickup and big tires, and the person driving it had I think two American flags on the back. And even there I thought, well, that's going to be trouble. But why should it be? He lives in America. I'm assuming it was a man. I don't know who was driving it. Didn't really see. But why should that be a problem? But even for myself, I thought, oh, that's you're going to get yourself some trouble doing that, because that's just the temperature of things today.
I saw a Make America Great Again hat on the dash of someone's truck in downtown Oklahoma City the other day, and that's the same thought I had. Oh, that guy's going to have his window smashed in. So that's just kind of our first thought now, because violence has become commonplace and acceptable, and really it's not even strongly rebuked by a lot of people with powerful voices anymore. If you look at the situation with Kathy Griffin and her disgusting display, the media rebuked it, if you could call it that, but they also said, oh, we're tired of talking about it, let's move on, after 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's not exactly what happened with the whole Trump-Russia thing.
Well, even with the last week, obviously in the aftermath of that shooting, everyone's kind of, they take a step back for a second. But then there's been some false reporting by the New York Times that they got caught doing, and then they had to apologize for that, sort of, in relation to that shooting. And then one of the top stories today is the focus shifts to where did the guns come from. You know, it's not really the issue, but that's how it's starting to shift. So it's interesting to watch the way they talk about it. They say, well, we're all unified, you know, despite the politicians in particular, despite the fact that they'll go back and forth. You know, at the end of the day, we're all on the same, you know, we're all on the same page. No, you're not. You're kidding. No, you're not. And the 50% that is going one way and 50% the other, according to recent polls in this country, they're not on the same page at all.
And I believe yesterday Nancy Pelosi actually blamed Republicans for the climate of violence in the country right now. She was being asked a question about the shooting of Republicans by a Democrat,
yeah,
and she said it was the Republicans' fault because back in the 90s, apparently Republicans were defaming President Bill Clinton. He wasn't defaming himself. The Republicans were doing that to him.
Yeah, it's really interesting. This is it's a good, interesting a piece here from Buchanan.org, A Long History of Leftist Hatred. That's the trend that we see in the nation. So pretty interesting.
Worth looking at. The list just goes on and on. And again, for a long time, it was anarchists who targeted members of both parties. But what we've seen the last 40 or 50 years, basically, is a target of the right specifically. That's kind of how it's transformed a lot more.
Yeah. Interesting times. And there's a lot about it at thetrumpet.com. You should check out. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show talks about it a fair bit, too. Some great insight there. Make sure you listen for those. And America Under Attack and Great Again, two really important books. You can find those at thetrumpet.com. They give you a lot of good insight about what we see happening. Abraham, you've got a write-up here. This is another trend we see happening. It's from reason.com. I don't know if they're reasonable or not, but they say they are. the title's interesting, but then it's kind of strange. It says, young men are playing video games instead of getting jobs. And they say, that's okay for now. I didn't know that was okay, but what do they have to say?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting article because they're finding that since about 2,000 men in their 20s without bachelor degrees are considerably working less and spending far more time playing video games and doing whatever they want, basically. And I think that's been pretty well documented with the unemployment rate, where it's a lot of young men in their prime of their lives who are living with their parents and doing whatever they want instead of working. And some of them can't find jobs or it's too expensive to get their own place, but for a lot of them, it's a free ride. And they found that of all the 20-year-olds who can't find work, 70% of them live with their parents, and it's deliberate. Like, they're not seeking work. They just gave up, and they're living in their parents' basement.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty sizable number of people. And so they asked, like, well, what are they doing with all their spare time if they're not working? And one of the big answers is they're playing video games. And so this article, that the author is a gamer himself, and so he's sympathetic towards the gamer cause. But it is interesting just the points he brings out, because it's he's trying to justify a young man wasting away his life playing video games. And so he has some really interesting quotes here. And one point he brings out is that video games, they leave, like, from his experience, they make you feel powerful. Because you're playing as some superhuman most of the time, or you feel successful because you did a really hard thing. But other days, it make you feel worthless because you're not actually doing anything. You're sitting in front of a TV, and video games don't, like you said, don't bring food on the table. They don't do anything. They just make you feel good about yourself in some fantasy world. And so,
well, it's stimulation.
Yeah,
I don't know if it make you feel. Well, it makes you feel good for a while, but it's just stimulation. They're craving that stimulation. But you know what's so interesting, too, about video games? Or you could say this about any sort of really entertainment, I guess. But with video games, they're pretending to do something that other people probably actually did.
Yeah.
Say if it's a war game, they're pretending to do something that soldiers did. They went and fought. But if you take that further down the line, is anyone going to make a game about them where you pretend to, you know, live with your parents and play a game? No. They're pretending to do stuff that is good, that people actually, in a lot of cases, not every case, but, you know, if it's a race car game, I know that's probably, nobody does that anymore, but, or, you know, any of these other things, they are doing things that are action-adventure, and they're exciting, and that probably somebody did at some point, you know, short of shooting aliens, but if they look at what they're doing, nothing. No, history is not going to, I don't think, record their time very kindly. You know, the great generation that did nothing, played games. Even the term gamer, what do you do? I'm a gamer. What does that mean? You play games?
That's shameful, isn't it?
It is shameful.
It's embarrassing to call yourself something like that. Like, this is what I do. I think, really, if you call yourself anything, even if you call yourself a reader, like, that just kind of gives the impression that it's extreme. It's great to read, and it depends on what you read in a lot of cases. But if that's all you're doing, it means you're not well-rounded, and you're not really developing the whole man or the whole woman. That's where it gets to be a little bit much. It's fine to appreciate maybe a decent video game sometimes, but to be a gamer, that means you're really into it. You're probably spending a ton of money and time on it. There used to be a trend called taking a gap year, where after school and before getting into a career, you kind of pursued a couple of interests or dreams that you've had for a long time. Now it just seems like people are taking a gap life. Like, they're not even... Yep. Moving on to the real life stage of things. They're just staying in the basement, their parents' basement, and playing games. That's not even worthwhile, and it's nothing that you could be proud of to tell your children and grandchildren in a few years.
Well, and it does tie also back into Social Security, which the New Deal on this day was began to implement. They're not paying into that system. You know, that's the idea. The idea was that the younger generation would pay in. Now, well, plenty of people do work and pay in, but they're not paying in. And when I hear about things like this, I always think, well, at some point, though, you have to face reality. Like, mom and dad won't always be there. They are getting older, I'm assuming. Everybody is. So at some point, who's going to provide for you? Who's gonna fund this lifestyle? Unless you're independently wealthy or something, and I guess that's your choice, but I would think a lot of them are not.
Yeah, well, that's actually an interesting point he brings up here. And what's interesting is he goes through a theory that a bunch of different sociologists have on video games, that if young men aren't working and just living off a system that where they can play video games all day, that's going to create this class warfare where you have the video gamers and everyone who's not working eventually are going to have to fight against the people who are working because they're going to get sick and tired of funding their vacation from life. And that's, to me, it doesn't make any... Well, it's a very niche way of looking at it, but it's basically that's what communism says is going to happen. They're going to have these different classes of people fight against each other. So to me, it was a weird kind of tangent in this article about how men playing, not working, can lead to class warfare. And he also made the point that, well, at least they're playing video games and not rioting. It's like, well, I'm pretty sure most of the people who are playing video games are rioting, or at least some of them, because that's how riots start. Young people have nothing else to do. They don't have responsibilities, so they go and riot. That's most of the time, that's how it works. And so it's just trying to justify a lifestyle that breeds a lack of self-respect, and it breeds just selfishness to the point to where you start doing outlandish things.
Well, sure. Does it seem like a good idea to have a whole group of people that are dependent on stimulation of a particular kind? And then somewhere along the line, maybe that stops. Maybe there's an economic problem or there's something, and you take that away. Is that and they've been stimulated with a lot of violence and so forth. Does anyone think they're going to come out of there and unify and start working together? I would think they'd be upset.
Yeah.
And start just acting out very selfishly in bad ways. That would be my guess.
There is an article on PCOG.org from 15 years ago called The Sin of Idleness, and it talks about how Western affluence, having more time and money, a lot fewer manual labor jobs, has basically given people more energy when they're not working, which in this case, this is people not working at all. And so really all that gives you motivation to do is to consume. You have more time, more money on your hands, you're less tired from a hard job, and so you have more energy to throw into things that are normally pretty destructive. If you get into video games or the wrong ones, especially, or in excess, that's where really a lot of problems are caused. And those are people who could be educating themselves from hard study. They could be strengthening their physical bodies through exercise. But what they're choosing to do really is just tearing down character.
You know what? If somebody was really inventive, they would come up with a job where you trick people into working by making them think it's a video game. You know, put out an ad like, come work, you know, come play video games at my place. And you have a warehouse or something, and you like convince them it's a game moving boxes. They don't realize it, but at the end of the day, they actually have done something. you could do pretty well. Pay them in tokens.
Yeah,
be great.
Well, the funny thing is, there are video games out there that simulate having a job, like working in a kitchen, being a doctor, all these things. Like, well, just go do it in real life. Like, why are you sitting there playing a game? But there's some. I just have a couple quotes here. Some really weird reasoning, I think, and it shows that if you adopt this kind of lifestyle, it might make you happy, quote unquote, but it's actually creating a disengaged electorate to where they're pretty much useless, to put it frankly. And this is what he says. Even the most open-ended games tend to offer a sense of progress and direction, completion and commitment. In other words, they make people happy, or at least happier, serving as a buffer between the player and despair. Video games, you might say, offer a sort of universal basic income for the soul, which is ridiculous. But then he says, as with welfare and transfer programs, there are trade-offs. They can cushion individuals from life's difficulties and hardships, but they can also provide disincentives to work by making unemployment more pleasurable. In economist terms, video games raise an individual's reservation wage, the amount of compensation it takes to make someone choose work. A crucial difference, of course, is that playing video games does not incur a direct burden on the taxpayers. I disagree with that. On the other hand, as Avent, he's a psychologist, notes, a world in which prime-age workers are playing games rather than building employment skills and careers is one that is likely to see slower economic growth and the strain of social safety net. So basically, the reason I read that is it shows that with socialist-type principles, we're creating a society where young men can waste away their lives playing video games instead of building skills where they can actually get a job. And it's not... article takes a very selfish view, I think, where it's all about self-fulfillment, you being happy. Well, what about building the nation you live in? What about doing something for the community you live in your neighborhood? What about helping people around you that need help through something you can give them? It just takes away all the selfless traits of a society that helped made America what it is today, which is by being selfless, by helping other people in your community. So this kind of ties in with what we were talking about with the family earlier, is that it's a very selfish approach to how to live in society, and it's a very foolish way to do it, or a very frivolous way, but still it's making people so selfish that they won't have the character to help anyone else or to help their nation.
Yeah, it's a get lifestyle. There's nothing giving about it. It doesn't benefit anybody else, typically. And then, too, if you project further, you'd have to wonder, what would the next generation be like?
Yeah.
Like, the kids that would be raised by these people. I don't think they'll raise kids, because anything that gets in the way of that stimulation is probably going to be put on the back burner, to say the least. And so, you know, if you can't be motivated to work as a man, how can you be motivated to take care of a kid? Because when you have a child, that if you do it well... you do have to put them ahead of yourself. They need things. When you don't want to do it, you know, you've got to get up in the middle of the night when they need something. And it's just the basic responsibilities of adulthood that are being retarded and held, you know, they're not growing and developing. And so it's not just about not getting a job. You know, if you can't get a job, how are you going to have a family? And then where do these kids come from? I'm sure they'll still have kids, but where do they go? Who raises them? Well, that fits right back into what they're trying to tell you. It doesn't matter. They'll end up how they end up no matter what. So you can play your game and then you just let them be around somewhere in the background and they'll be fine. But of course that's not true. So what kind of a generation would that be? Raised by, you know, another, I guess, biological adult or several in some configuration that play games for most of the time. And then how do you get money? The government? Welfare? Well, that's not going to last forever either.
We've already seen the impact of the hippie generation having children, and that didn't turn out too great in general. And now we're going to have the blue-haired, piercing video game playing generation trying to have children at some point, and they're probably a lot less likely to stick around for those children than even the hippie generation was. It's just, if you have no ability of controlling your own life, you can't shape other lives to be beneficial or worthwhile or serving any type of purpose.
And that's not even to mention military. Every nation in this day and age needs a military. You're going to have a hard time finding people willing to sacrifice for anything. I mean, that's hard for anybody to do because it's such a great sacrifice. But if you have a whole... And I know, I've heard the argument that, oh, no, they'll be good at, you know, shooting missiles or something. Come on. I mean, if you have to go out there and really sacrifice and give of yourself for something that is greater than you personally, which is the nation, I don't think you're going to find a great bunch here.
Well, yeah, I mean, most of them will be obese, number one, so they can't even serve in the military. The other point is that being a soldier, 90% of the time, you're just uncomfortable. Maybe 10% of your time as a soldier, you're actually in a combat situation. But most of the time, you're in a trench somewhere, you're cold, you're hungry, you're walking around in Iraq in 120-degree heat, wearing 50 pounds of body armor. You're doing all these things that make you very uncomfortable. They're not pleasant, but that's just the job, and that's what it entails. And so there's going to be no one from that generation. Well, there might be a few. I won't be so dogmatic, but very unlikely that they'll have the character to uphold the ethos and the military code of the military, but also have a attitude to sacrifice for everyone else. And just like in ancient Rome, right up until when the barbarians marched into Rome, people were getting drunk and doing all the things that they were doing. And in this nation, if we keep on this trend, people will probably play video games right up until when the barbarians march into America.
We don't have any time to get into it, but I did see a headline today where a writer was talking about the new Call of Duty game. I think you talked about it a while ago.
Yeah.
But he loves it. He says it's restored his faith in that video game because finally they're getting back into battles, historic battles. So anyway, different takes on those things. But it is a sad situation in those cases. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Hopefully you have a great weekend. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and Trumpet Hour Week in Review. Also watch Jerusalem, a new one as well. Thanks for joining us today. Myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Hirsch, and Abraham Blondeau. Have a great weekend. Talk to you Monday.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.